That's the sound and the growling of the beast beyond that.
Tough diligence for these contacts, that could be. Okay, we'll assume it's friendly anyway, okay?
Two of them, and they're
acting
fine the whole time. They're outside,
like
you say that.
Oh, my God, I hope that's a plane. Oh, Jesus, please be a plane. Oh, please. Marley, sir, are you ready for this?
Cameraman said, what the hell is that midway across the Hudson River? It was a perfectly circular disc.
UFO of you, and I am too surprised.
For the first time in our history, we're studying something that's studying us.
Nobody told me that these days like this.
Suddenly, something else flew into the frame. Fired a beam of light that struck the dummy warhead, doing a circle, if you can imagine, circling our warhead. Fired another beam of light at it, which struck the warhead.
The Virtually Strange Network presents Strange Days Indeed, your premier source for UFO information, with your host, Errol Bruce Knapp.
Yes, these certainly are strange days indeed, and this program reflects the UFO side of the strangeness. Welcome to those of you listening here in Toronto and in Montreal, around the world on the web via the live stream, and to you, wherever you are, via the podcast, to program 397 in the current series. Wherever you're listening, we'd like to hear from you. The email address is sdi@virtuallystrange.net, and we'll give you the telephone numbers in a little while. Tonight, Dave Frelott, surprise Dave, with his take on it, our East Coast correspondent Don Ledger, and contributing editor Alfred Lemberg will walk us home. Well, it's June, and apparently from what you've been hearing on the news, it's kind of silly season too, isn't it? Peacocks and gasoline pumps, at least here in Toronto, and if you have no idea what I'm talking about, it's as bizarre as it sounds. Peacock has been courting a gasoline pump in the United Kingdom, so... And talking about strangeness going on, the current issue of Fate magazine, I love Phyllis Galdi's magazine. If you can pick yourself up a copy, it's a small sort of, almost like a Reader's Digest size nowadays. And there's always fascinating stuff in there, always interesting UFO stories and wonderful reports from the Fate magazine readers. For instance, this letter from Jim L. Brassfield of Collierville in Tennessee. He says, as a well-educated person with an IQ in the Mensa genius range, I've always felt very offended by the attitude of skeptics that anyone who experiences something that can't be explained is a moron, mentally ill, or a liar. He says, after 1 year of subscribing to Skeptical Inquirer, I decided not to renew because of the derogatory and demeaning manner in which most paranormal researchers were dismissed. If the skeptics cannot find a valid argument to counter a claim made in the field of UFOs, ghosts, reincarnation, or other such areas, they invariably resort to character assassination and ridicule. Hardly a good example of the scientific method. If one claims to have experienced something that mainstream science cannot explain, the old standbys, temporal lobe epilepsy or fantasy-prone personality, are trotted out. In reality, temporal lobe epilepsy is quite rare and seldom results in the type of paranormal experiences it is used to explain. As for fantasy-prone personality, it has never been shown to be a factor in the vast majority of people reporting UFOs, ghosts, or abductions. Quite the contrary, the people making such reports are often in better mental health than the general population. They're well-educated and often employed in white-collar jobs. Jim Brassfield continues, I have come to realize that there is very little difference between the radical believer who says, I believe, and nothing will change my belief, and the diehard skeptic who says, I don't believe, and no amount of evidence will make me believe. He tends to agree more with the philosophy of the Dalai Lama, which is, facts conflict with my beliefs. I need to examine my beliefs and change them if facts require it. And Jim Brassfield continues, since most paranormal experiences by their very nature are not repeatable in controlled studies, James Randi, the faintly amusing Randi, has little concern about anyone claiming his $1 million prize for demonstrating a paranormal event. The average ghost isn't about to pop up in Randy's living room on command, nor is it likely that an alien from the planet Zixpickle will land in his garden either. Contrary to the claims of many so-called psychics, most true paranormal events are purely random and spontaneous, much like a lightning strike or a falling meteor. Well, I know one or two psychics who would roundly disagree with him, but that's the subject of perhaps a future series.
These are strange days indeed on UFO News Radio. Here with his take on it is Dave Berlock.
There's an interesting thread beginning on the UFO updates list entitled Wake Up Call on Alien Visits. And it comes to us from an article of the same name, written by Stephen Pincock for the Sydney Morning Herald, New South Wales, Australia. Now, I realize that our brethren down under sometimes have to wait for things to reach them, but this article pertains to sleep paralysis being the be-all, end-all reason for the reports of alien abductions. Once again, another noted psychologist, Professor Chris French, head of the Anomalistic Psychology Research Unit at Goldsmiths College, University of London, has come up with this earth-shaking theory and closes the book on the whole alien abduction concept. And this time, he's even closed the piece about people who were driving at the time. Because instead of merely sleeping in their beds, he claims that our sleep patterns themselves allow us to live in a kind of fantasy world. But I leap ahead of myself here. French and his colleagues wanted to compare the psychology of a group of 19 people who believed they had had experiences of alien encounters and another group of 19 age and gender matched people who had not. The team subjected all the people to tests that measured their tendency to have paranormal beliefs and hallucinations, the ease with which they become engrossed in experiences, and their propensity to enter into altered states of consciousness. On all of those scales, the 19 who said they had experiences of alien encounters scored significantly higher than the control group. In other words, if you have a propensity to be able to daydream, you just might be a candidate for an alien abduction experience. Now, this kind of research is amazing because what it does is answer the question about how someone could imagine being abducted by alien beings and imagining all the intricate details of what they underwent while in the hands of these beings. Professor French states, "We've all seen the X-Files. We know what alien abduction is supposed to be like." He goes on to say, "So people weave together their expectations, their beliefs, and so on into what they convince themselves is true. For people who have the psychological profile he found among his alien experiencers, this may be an easier task than for others." Now, French goes further. He hypothesizes that at least in some cases, childhood trauma such as sexual abuse, physical abuse, or terrible illness may trigger a kind of psychological coping mechanism that allows people to become absorbed in a fantasy life as a way of escaping from unpleasant reality. So, case closed. The people who experience alien abductions suffer from a sleep disorder and or daydream all about their experiences. Oh, and I should also mention that Professor French states, in many cases, those who do acquire memories do so after undergoing techniques such as hypnosis, regression therapy, or guided imagery designed to help them retrieve their memories of these events. And these processes can create memories of things that never happened. That's all well and good, but there are a couple of tiny little problems with the theory. Firstly, how would our good professor explain multiple person abductions, such as Betty and Barney Hill? Did they both experience the same kind of daydream? And how would our learned professor explain cases where someone went missing? And although people searched for the person, they never found that person until days later. Would that be some kind of elaborate fantasy daydream that went on for several days? Oh, and what about the reports from people who never saw The X-Files or any shows like them because those shows were decades away from coming to television? I personally would be very pleased to learn that all the reports of alien abduction are nothing more than people's daydreams or being caught in sleep paralysis, as I am sure that anyone who has ever actually reported being abducted would also like to believe. But unfortunately, the myriad of other things I've mentioned, as well as physical trauma that people have shown evidence of experiencing, doesn't allow for this theory to be the conclusive answer. But that's just my take on it.
Days for Long, every week at this time. Strange Days, indeed.
And it was a good take back then, and it's a good take tonight. Dave Furlott actually off tonight. Well, it's more his computer and his phone system is off tonight. But that's just a UFO of a different color. So we won't go too deeply into that one. I was talking about Fate magazine earlier on. There's a great article in here, UFOs over sacred sites, which you can get to via tonight's program listing. If you go to the program listing, or if you just go to virtuallystrange.net, what you will find there is a button that leads you to UFO updates. And in the past week or so, we've posted some interesting stuff. We've been posting interesting stuff there since 1996. That's 10 years of UFO updates and 65,000 something emails are archived at virtuallystrange.net. And as has been said many times on this program, if you start from the very beginning of the archive and work your way through, well, it should be a PhD in ufology, but, you know, most university professors would say it's not worth a damn. It's just a waste of your time. But we know better, don't we? That's why you're listening and why I'm sitting here. A lot of email last week about the clip that Wendy Connors sent us to play in her absence. She's still recovering down there in Albuquerque, New Mexico. Wendy Connors of Faded Discs. Listen carefully to this one. This is an interesting. This is what she sent us, and we played last week, and we've had requests to play it again.
Did you hear any sound by any chance?
Yes. There was a humming noise, and we could hear it right now. It's right over the house.
Right now?
Yes.
Okay.
I know it wasn't an airplane. I know damn well what I saw.
And this is the sound that we heard in the background on the phone of the UFO. And then Wendy took this sound and tweaked it digitally, and this is what the UFO sound is. Yeah, isn't that interesting? Thanks to Wendy Connors of Faded Discs. She has a new CD out with dozens of hours of stuff on it. Go to fadeddiscs.com and check it out. Everybody's out of town. At least they are in Canada. And it's an amazing weekend that we've had here so far, and it promises to be even better. It's hot. The pools are open. The pool in our backyard was severely used today, and the sun hadn't really warmed it. It was just so darn warm that everybody was happy to leap in there. And I have a feeling it's that way out on the East Coast, too, in Nova Scotia, where in dwell Don Ledger. Don is an author, UFO researcher, and pilot living outside Halifax, Nova Scotia. He's written three books, The Maritime UFO Files, Swiss Air Down, and most recently, along with Chris Stiles, Dark Object, the investigation into the Shag Harbor UFO incident. Our East Coast Pirates joins us on the line.
Good evening.
Good evening, Don. I lapped into Finnish or Swedish or something there. It's the heat today, Don, in this city. It's been remarkable.
Yeah, it was pretty. The temps were pretty high down here. I guess probably somewhere peaked out around 27 today.
Mm.
And I guess it's coming across the country. We just got over that.
Alberto. Ended up being some sort of hair shampoo or something.
Yeah.
Right?
And by that I don't mean there was anything serious about it. Just a lot of rain and a little bit of wind, but big hurricane anyway. Wish they could all be like that, and we never had to worry about them.
I know you guys have taken quite a beating out on the east coast of Canada the last three years. Yeah.
Yeah. When I was a young fella, we used to get them showing up too. I don't know if it's a cycle we're in or what, but we seem to get them back. I mean, they come right up the east coast of the United States. Some of them mm-hmm. pour right inland, and then. But we've had some. Hurricane Juan there that knocked hell out of Halifax there a few years ago.
Yep.
And
there wasn't a UFO to be seen, was there?
Not one.
Not one.
That blows them out of the way, I think.
Mm. Tom Theophanis called me the other day, and I don't know if you... I think I talked about this a week or so ago, but Tom, who was the former director for MUFON Ontario of Investigation, mm-hmm. he called me and he said, I want to report a UFO, and I gave him the UFO reporting number, and he said, no, I just saw a UFO.
Yeah.
By Canada's Wonderland. He said he saw it was a cigar-shaped object, kind of fuzzy, you know, and of course there's nobody with him.
No. You
know, where's his camera? In the trunk of his car. Yeah. He's on a main 8-lane highway. You know, he can't do anything. He can't pull over and pull the camera out. Right by Canada's Wonderland, just north of Toronto, that happened a week or so ago.
Anything come of it?
I'm sorry?
Anything come of it?
No, of course not.
No.
Nothing comes of it, you know? I mean, he's going to report it to himself, right?
Well, just going back to Dave Furlock's little piece there on this fellow talking about people all of a sudden falling asleep in their car or whatever they're doing.
Yes.
Or they're wide awake, but they're asleep or something like that
mm-hmm.
in Australia. These things, I don't know. He almost suggests like these people are confabulating these things, and it takes a while to build up to it. But I mean, I've had two different sightings, and one similar, in nature to Tom's sighting. Back a few years ago, I was driving my truck through Burnside, which is a huge industrial park, and on the other side of the harbor from Halifax and Dartmouth, and it just happened to go over just when I couldn't get out. I'm trapped at the lights, and the light has just changed, which is, you know, had the light had changed the other way, and I had a red light, I might have been able to get out of the truck and look at this thing. But I went over the car, 10 o'clock in the morning, you know, a nice, bright, sunny day and everything, no big deal. And I only got to glimpse it for like 4 or 5 seconds, but it was a weird-looking black thing going right over the industrial park.
Mm-hmm.
And I've also had two other decent sightings. One with Graham Conway at UFO BC out in the West Coast. Him and I were together. 2 o'clock in the afternoon, nice bright sunny day. The other one was at night while I was, my wife and I were sitting out on this house I'm still building down here. But we were sitting outside the rafters. Some of the rafters were up, but that was about it. And so you could look right up through at the sky. It was September 16th, I remember.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the second time something's happening on September 16th. But anyway, this thing just sort of, we were looking at a jet flying over it about, it was about, you know, probably 9 o'clock in the evening, and it was well after dusk, but there was, the jet was flying to the west, to the southwest, probably heading to Kennedy or Boston, and up there at about probably 35,000 feet or so, but he was up high enough, he was still catching, and his contrail was still catching enough sunlight, and and so that we could see him. So we're just sort of watching him go over me. You could just, as he gets to the right, almost to pass over top of the trees, you could just begin to hear the sound coming from him because, you know, he's motoring along up there about 500 knots. And all of a sudden, right over the treetops, this thing comes roaring. Well, it doesn't roar across. It just comes across the over top and heads to the east. And
which thing?
Well, whatever this thing was I saw. And, you know,
so 9 o'clock in the evening.
Yeah, about 9 o'clock. And
so
I said September 16th, and it was August the 16th.
Okay. All right. So what is it that you actually saw?
If you could imagine two rectangular squares at the back of something, which I couldn't see the front of, that were lit up with almost like a glittery, it was almost like a show business type of glittery color. Two rectangular squares separated, and just ahead of that, at about, five to six times the thickness of these things, ahead of that was just one big red light, and not pulsing or doing anything. And the back looked like radiators, like something you would see on Star Trek or something like that, on some futuristic ship that's in space that's moving, you know, and it's just lit up its whatever is motivating the thing. It was very silent, and I looked at this thing and I said, what the, you know, can't swear on radio, even though I sometimes do. As a pilot, my...
So you were with Graham Conway, right?
No, not that. This was Graham Conway. This is me and my wife.
Oh, you and your wife.
House, yeah. This
okay,
other
so,
one was
so you and Marion are out there, and so what did you do?
Well, nothing. I just sort of stood up, and I watched this thing going over, and there's not much I could do about it. And I didn't even have access to a phone. You know, there was no phone line or anything in here. We were just billing here then.
Right.
And So I watched this thing go over, and my brain's clicking over trying to identify this thing, and somebody tried to tell me it was a space station, and I said, come on, for God's sakes, it wasn't a space station, and it wasn't the solar array or anything. This thing was very sort of anomalous looking, and the light that was coming off of these two radiators in the back, and this thing was moving too fast anyway and too large to be the space station, going in the wrong direction.
And the space station is not, you know, I mean, you can't mistake it for something coming over the trees.
No,
you know?
It doesn't have a big red light on it.
No, it doesn't. It just looks like, it almost looks like a faint LED traveling very fast across the sky.
Yeah.
Program 397 in the current series, on the line with us from the East Coast is our East Coast correspondent, Don Ledger, who had a sighting on August 15th, or sort of middle of August it was, wasn't it, Don Ledger?
Yes, it was.
Lemberg wants to know, what did your wife have to say about it? What was her report?
Well, actually, she didn't get as good a look at it as I did, so and she thought, well, it must have been an airplane, I guess. an airplane.
Yeah, right.
You know,
mm-hmm.
it was just pretty anomalous. There's no two ways about it. And, it came the opposite direction of the other aircraft that was heading, you know, mm-hmm. up there at 35,000. And this thing was very low. I would say no more than somewhere between 500 and 1,000 feet. And just completely caught me off guard. But if I could have in any way, shape, or form turned this into an aircraft, I'm sure my brain would have done it fairly quickly. But, I mean, it stayed with me. And it kept niggling away at me all night long, and I kept thinking at this thing, and I was, you know, trying to nail down what it could have been. And just, there was just no way I could figure out what it was. And, you know, the fact that it was
and
fly.
I would say that being a fly guy yourself, you would have seen an airplane or three and probably would have recognized most models, right?
Yeah, well, you get quite a library in your head when you're a pilot of aircraft that fly, because you're always looking at airplanes. And
yes.
I suppose I could probably identify a couple of thousand airplanes now. You know, if you just flash them up, and I can tell you, if I can't get the exact model, I can get you the type and who built it or what country built it.
Yeah, you'd recognize the silhouette. You're like, you know, like the guys used to in the Second World War, the air, you know, the air raid the wardens in the UK, and even on the west coast of the States too.
It's like people know stamps and coins. It's the same thing with pilots.
You know aircraft.
Yeah.
And that's why when pilots report unidentified flying objects, when they report them. Because most of them are very loath to do that. They like their jobs and their pensions too much.
That's right, yeah.
But when they do report them, you have to take them seriously because these guys are used to seeing all kinds of silhouettes in the sky.
Yep.
And when they report that they've got an identified, they have an unidentified.
Mm.
That's what I was trying to say.
That's right. They, well, they pay attention to it because, first of all, does it think, does it know if they're talking if they're in what's it called IFR conditions or something, or in flight following or whatever, under the control of air traffic control, then you're supposed to know everything that's there. And if they see something that's too close, it's not supposed to be there because there are clearances to be in. In effect, and you know, and it's a big deal. I'm always trying to stress this with researchers and so on that you just can't break regulations and get away with the foolishness that some people assume can happen. You know, with any pilot can hop in his airplane day or night, get into the air and do whatever he wants, and that's not true. It's not the way it works. But that's such a huge subject that takes a long time to talk about. Bringing up pilots, I had gotten an email a short while ago from Brian Veik.
HBCC UFO.
Yeah, right. Okay.
Houston, British Columbia, Canada, UFO.
Too many letters for this old brain to remember.
You got an email from Brian Veik?
Yeah.
Well.
To tell me that he had... a pilot report to him about from Nova Scotia. A pilot lives in Nova Scotia, and he was going to contact him at the pilot and see if it was all right to send his name to me, you know, so I could contact him directly. And
did he?
Well, I haven't heard back from him yet. This was only, you know, maybe a couple of hours ago.
Oh, good.
And so whether it comes or the pilot lives in Nova Scotia. He's a police officer and a pilot.
Mm-hmm.
And,
yeah, because Brian has been somewhat reluctant to pass some stuff on to some researchers.
Yeah.
I guess because he feels, you know, that he's obliged to maintain that, what's the word?
Confidentiality.
Confidentiality, yeah.
Yeah. Well, what he's doing now is he's contacting the pilot and asking him if he can, you know, give me his email or whatever, his contact information, and I contact him directly.
Yeah.
And whatever happened in 1995, and I'd be interested in hearing about it.
Absolutely. Don, can you stay with us for a while longer?
Oh, sure.
Good. You and I have had many discussions about what we feel some of this may be about, or how long it's been going on, and things that intrigue us that don't appear to be associated with UFOs, but yet, on the other hand, we have a feeling that there is some sort of connection there, right?
Well, yeah, this is true.
And it, for me, anyway, it goes right back to the start of the Old Testament and the plural and singular of God, Eloha and Elohim.
Mm-hmm.
And it's interesting that the Bible uses the plural word for gods. And the gods came down out of the skies.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Not being a theologian myself.
No, me either.
Just about any religion I can imagine, it always seems to look to the skies for the superpower, and you have to wonder about that. Like you, I dabble in that side of it a bit because it just seems to be quite strange that what we're looking for and what some other people are looking for seem to be coming from the same place, you know, or it might be, you know. You don't dare mention the ET or the ETI or whatever it is sometimes in ufology, but I don't have a problem with it myself. I mean, but there's some kind of a psychosis or a mind block or whatever you want to call it.
It's blinking thinking. I mean, a lot of ufologists practice what they accuse the skeptics or the debunkers of practicing, you know.
They can get up to the doorway of this thing, but they can't go through it, you know.
Right, and they're only interested in the object and not the occupants.
Yeah, well, this is true. And the other problem is space travel and travel to the stars, and quite often, I think it's taken the wrong way, because we look at it as an observer, not as the traveler. The traveler who's traveling at close to the speed of light, imagine intelligences that are... so far above us that we couldn't even imagine. You know, Arthur C. Clarke has mentioned that it would appear like magic to us.
Yeah.
I think we can understand magic. I think these things would be way above that.
Mm-hmm.
Or not all of them, but I mean, much of whatever intelligence would be in the universe. I keep using Michio Kaku down in
New York.
New York. University there, and his take on it, that you should, these UFOs should not be thrown aside. They should not be discounted, that people should be looking at these things.
Well, I think he said in the close of the Peter Jennings UFO special on ABC that even if it, one of these reports was true, it deserved looking into.
Exactly. And that and then in other, I've heard him make other statements, you know, that if there was intelligence in the universe, they could be like 25 million years to 25 million years to the power of 10 ahead of us.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the universe is supposed to be around 13 billion years old, 13 and a half. It would just seem to me that there's, you know, a lot of things have been going on, that the laws of probability should open up the fact, or the possibility of there being other intelligences up there that who could have stumbled across us back years ago. We were just maybe a couple of years behind what we are now in intelligence. But the strange thing of it is, you know, you go back 35,000 years or 40 or 50,000 years, our ancestors were as intelligent as we were. They just didn't have the tools to work with and the knowledge, you know.
Yeah, well, when you go back to, the ancient Indian histories, and they talk about the Vimanas, the flying vehicles, and the wars that went on, and the Brahma weapon that destroyed tens of thousands of people, this enormous flash in the sky, which to my, you know, relatively ignorant of these kinds of things way of thinking, it sounds remarkably like,
a nuclear
explosion. Yeah.
And that's not the, you know, somebody mentioned about the Lot's wife, you know, saw it.
Turned into salt, yes.
Yeah, and the green glass that's been found in that area, which is peculiar to a nuclear explosion.
Yes.
Maybe there is something. You know, not all of these stories have to be necessarily dyed-in-the-wool religious stories. That could be another way of interpreting something in your own technology, in your own ear, as to how you're seeing things.
Yep.
As you're describing, and we have to remember that when we see these things that are 300 and 400 and 500 years old, these reports, they're being related to or written down in the knowledge of the day, in the technology of the day. And 300 and 400 and 500 years ago, one of the biggest technological breakthroughs was the sailing ship. You know, it had most of the technology. Look at the big deal they made about the fact that they finally came up with a watch that would keep time so they could use it to find longitude, you know, and I mean the British Navy spent years looking for it,
and how about that young virgin that was involved with an old man who took a walk in the desert and ran into an angel who told her that she would give birth to a miraculous child, you know? Joining us from Arne Pryor is George. Good evening, George.
You want the you want him question answered? I can answer that one for you.
Which question, George?
The one you were talking with the Elam, that they, why they're always looking to the sky for things. I can answer that question.
Go ahead.
Okay, now, if you take a picture of a dark sky with thunderclouds in it, guess what you find in the clouds?
Rain.
No, pictures of human faces.
Really?
Yeah, you'll find human faces in the clouds, and the faces are really there.
A Rorschach test in the clouds, huh?
No, the faces are really there. They really exist.
Really?
Yeah.
Mm.
Now, the reason for that is that matter exists in several vibrational levels, which even the worst scientists in this country can figure that one out. Yeah. Okay, the question I want to ask about is the UFO things. You're talking about these things in the sky, right?
Yes.
Okay, flying around. Okay, now, if they're flying around in the sky, and there's some that fly just the treetop level, right?
Not necessarily, George.
Some of them fly high up and some fly down treetop level, okay?
Yes, okay, George.
Okay. Now, one of these would stop and go for a picnic, right? So they'd have to leave some evidence on the ground that would appear and disappear. Because I get stuff like from truck drivers and things where you go, you drive down a road and there's a tunnel, you come back the next day and the tunnel's not there.
Mm-hmm.
Or you go along a place and there was a road there and the road disappears.
You know,
you go and the building is not there again.
Yep. There are very strange things going on around us. I mean, not just things flying in the sky and landing, but there are all kinds of very other, what some people would call very spooky things going on.
No, but
fascinating stuff. George, I need to move on because I've got another call to get.
Different vibrational levels that explain it all, wouldn't it?
Yeah. It might. Different dimensions. Thanks for your call, George.
Okay.
Good night.
Bye.
Night. Yeah, well, you know, George, I guess, has seen all kinds of things and didn't lead to much of a question, though, Don.
No.
No.
Well, but I've, you know, I've heard, I remember talking to a trucker years ago, and he said, he did admit, and this, you know, there was a possibility he was a bit tired, but he had to slam his brakes on because there was a huge office building right in the middle of the highway in front of him. And, but, you know,
yeah.
He was just a... you know, a gog, you know, with this thing, and then it just sort of vanished. Now, back in the day when I was talking to this guy, I didn't have...
Was that daytime or nighttime?
It was nighttime.
Oh, so it wasn't a mirage.
No, that's what I would have been able to eliminate a few things that I wasn't familiar with and that I know about now.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a mirage or, you know, some kind of a temp inversion or something, flashing the thing in there. But anyway, he said, you know, him and other truck drivers had many weird experiences on the highway at night and sometimes during the daytime as well. So, you know, can't blow everything off.
No, I'm not blowing it off.
Oh, no, I'm not saying you were. You know, when you do it long enough, something's going to, I would imagine, something's bound to happen.
Well, you work radio long enough and, you know, suddenly the phones start, you know, screwing up and the texts come in and they can't explain it and the phones are working fine, you know.
Yeah,
it's the car and mechanic syndrome, and it's happened a few times on this program that we've had weirdness going on.
Yeah.
That is for sure. I need to squeeze another call in here, Don Ledger.
Sure.
This is Don, who lives out east of Oshawa. Good evening, Don.
Yes, good evening, guys. Thanks for taking my call. I've been meaning to call you for a couple of years now, a few years back.
Well, we've been waiting for you, Don, and, you know, it's only been 8 years that we've been here, but thanks for calling.
I'll tell you one thing.
Yeah.
Being a mature person, I don't really believe in UFOs and that, but I did see something which I would like to think that's possibly American technology.
Yeah, that's much more comforting than the possibility of it being something inexplicable, I guess.
Certainly easy to reason out, isn't
it? Yeah.
Well, I'll tell you what, on the night of the blackout, and about 3:30 in the morning, I was up and looked out the window, and completely dark, of course, and this object came from the east and traveled very slowly, and it seemed there's a railway track going across. It travels the same direction from east to west, and this object had four circles which followed together. And if you can do, it reminded me of flowers because the coloration was so great.
Mm-hmm.
It was red, green, and orange. And it was silent. There was no noise. And it was, you can't tell what shape the whole thing was, but all you could see, it looked like after burners, you know, like I said, four together, and it stopped in the middle of the sky. And I thought, holy Christ, what the hell is this? Pardon me, my language. But then... it started again and continued on west, and of course it stopped again. And there's a highway 115 going north from highway 401, and it seemed to hover on that location, and then it would just continue up north, further north.
Mm-hmm.
And I was waiting for somebody else to call in to see, you know, to make sure I wasn't dreaming or something or seeing something. I was waiting for somebody else to confirm what I saw, but nobody else called. And I figure, well, I can't, report to anybody. Nobody can do anything about it. I didn't have a camera to take a picture, and I was at home. My wife was at the hospital, so it's, I just let it ride, you know.
Yeah.
But I never seen one like that before. But the pattern of these circles, if you took a figure six and took it right to the center, and this would different, each six would be a different color. And like I said, we're very close to the United States.
Hmm.
And I thought perhaps they have balloons or something.
Yeah, balloons.
So this is the night of what my most concern was, my major concern. I thought, well, perhaps the Americans were checking out the nuclear plant, which is not too far away down here.
Yeah, it's the guys from Fort Drum who are still waiting to invade Canada in upper New York State, yeah.
Well, look,
why wouldn't they just drive up and check out the nuclear plant? You don't have to fly over top of it.
Yeah,
that.
But this was the night of the blackout a couple of years ago, right?
Yeah, quite correct.
Yeah, yeah.
Mm-hmm. I'll tell you what it done. The reason the American have technology, I understand, so I'm led to believe. I'm not involved in this type of thing, but If some person was to, say, make, you know, an attack or something like this, a terrorist or something like this, if they went across, I don't know, maybe they had something above looking down to check out the if there's any leaks or anything else like that, you know, anybody carrying something is hot.
Yeah. Don, have you had reports like this, Don Ledger?
No, well, there's all kinds of reports of these big monstrous things, but they're not American technology, I can tell you that right now.
Well, it's comforting for Don, who lives east of Oshawa, you know, to think that, you know, it could be a blimp or just some sort of American technology, but I would imagine that there was very little flying during that blackout.
Yeah. Well, you know, whatever floats your boat makes you feel more comfortable, but the fact of the matter is this stuff, you know, there is some mildly exotic military aircraft coming to the United States that we don't know about. Mm-hmm. First of all, they just can't fly up over Canada without permission. Mm-hmm. And second of all, the technology doesn't exist for what you're talking about right now. The even now, the United States is involved in, the United States military is involved in getting some high, they're called LTA, lighter than aircraft, you know, they're just reinventing dirigibles and the blimp and so on, but some that they can get up and control, and 800 to 1,000 feet long that they can get up to 80 and 90 and 100,000 feet and use them as radar platform and detection platforms to get ahead of AWACS, so they can be back basically 800 miles and still see down on the ground.
Mm-hmm.
And they're spending millions of dollars on this technology now. If they already have it, why are they doing it again?
Would
they
be silent, Don?
Hmm?
Would it be noiseless?
Pardon me?
Would they be
noiseless?
Well, they would
emitted?
Probably relatively noiseless once you get them up at 100,000 feet. And they're using ducted fans in the on the aircraft. This is not a secret. I subscribe to Aviation Week and Space Technology, and it's they've been talking about this now for the last 6 or 8 months. These ones are, of course, prototypes, and they're down around 300 and 400 feet long. Not as big as what the final product will be, but they're.
I need to interrupt you guys because we'd be plumb out of time. We've got 30 seconds to the news break.
Well,
Don, thank
you for taking my call.
Thank you for calling, Don, and getting it together to do it finally. Good night. Good night. And Don Ledger, thank you, sir.
Okay. Well.
We didn't get around to talking about the Piri Reis map or what the hell is going on down in the Antarctic, down around the South Pole. Very strange things going on down there.
A great segue into that, too.
Yeah, well, that's the way it goes. Thanks, Don Ledger. We'll talk to you real soon.
We'll see you in a few weeks.
Yeah, okay.
Bye now.
Good night. And I love Bubba. Bubba sends an email. The Bible, not the literal word of God. Keep talking like that. And you are going straight to hell, Don Ledger. And he says very quietly at the bottom of his email, God, I love stories about young virgins and old men. Oh, my. I'm glad Mother isn't listening tonight. Yeah, it is that time. It is that time. Every second week we pick up our banjos and we head down to Alabama. And therein dwell, that's the second time I've used that line tonight, La Donna Maria Helena Cantrell. No, it's Alfred Lemberg. That's who that is. And do we have our little boaty foghorn whistle?
That's Big Ten 4, good buddy.
Well, golly, you better just go ahead and do it and get it out of your system there, Lemberg.
Well, move your can.
Thank you. There. Now we've gotten that out of the way.
I didn't realize it was becoming such a hurdle.
Oh, no. It's, it's more a horror than a hurdle.
Oh, well, that's what I was aspiring to.
Yes, and you finally, after all these months, succeeded.
Gosh, yes.
Yes.
Yes, it's quite an accomplishment and probably the most significant thing I've ever done in my life.
Probably more than likely the last significant thing you'll do in your life if you keep it up, yeah?
That sounds a little ominous, Errol.
I'm not given to precognition, I have to tell you.
Oh, good.
Okay, so...
Well, where do you want to start, man?
Well, I don't know. I mean, we could continue on and we could sort of get into the Piri Reis map and Antarctica if you want.
Well, see, there you go. That's exactly what you probably should do, given that the entire theme of your program tonight, whether anybody has noticed it or not, has been the history of UFOs and how you can see them from way back when. I mean, did I miss something, or was that pretty much it?
No, you nailed it perfectly. You absolutely nailed it perfectly, and that's the way it seems to have gone. And I would have loved to have talked a little bit to Don about the Perry Reyes map, because I know he's interested in the ancients as well. And the Perry Reyes map, for those of you who have never heard of this map before... An astonishing story. It was supposedly found by a Turkish admiral, in the 1500s, Alfred?
Certainly that time frame.
I'm
going to get particular about the seconds and minutes. That time.
Yeah, but sort of 1500s. Not only does it delineate both coasts of the Americas, but it also goes down to Antarctica and shows a landmass there, which only in the last few years has been verified by the radar and the radar sats and the various technologies that can see down through the ice. And guess what? It's exactly that landmass that is depicted on the Perry Reyes map. Dun, 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 dun.
Seriously, I mean, that's where the music should have gone.
And that's where it should have gone, but of course, you know, there are other things going on in master control. Julian's head snapped up. What's going on?
They're taking that opportunity to have a V8, you know.
Yeah. No, but, you know, really. And then suddenly you start to hear these odd stories coming across in email and on various websites.
And the dismissals of them.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. Very, very quickly. But, I mean, one of the interesting stories, and I forget who it was, who on UFO Updates a few years ago was talking about the disappearance from the United States, whatever the mapping department is of the federal government down in your country. The disappearance of the maps of Antarctica. You can't find them anymore. They won't let you have them. So.
I mean, it's got to go there, you know.
So then we move on, and we hear the story of the two women who were circumnavigating the polar regions of the globe, and they did across the Antarctic and crossed the North Pole from one side to the other, then went down to the south ice cap down there, and set off boldly, heading where no woman had walked before, headed for the South Pole, when suddenly out of a blue sky an American Air Force helicopter lands and says to them, "You have to get on board." No, we're walking." "No, you don't understand. You have to get on board now. We're flying you out of here." "Well, why?" "Get on board." Gone. Exactly.
Damn. Dun, dun, dun,
dun. More cliffhanger music. And so now what you have, there are interesting things going on in Lake Vostok. The Russians and the United States are down there. Rumors of things being, drill holes being poured down there, and chunks of solid crystal coming up out of those boreholes down below Lake Vostok. So you have to wonder what was going on there before the polar ice cap appeared there, and how did that polar ice cap appear there, and why did that polar ice cap appear there, and what is under the ice cap now that is melting, that it seems that the United States authorities don't want anybody to know about.
Well, it's certainly the first I've heard about it, Errol, to
really?
Be honest with you.
Damn, I would have had a much better conversation about it with Don Ledger. We just ran out of time. Okay, we're taking up your time. We've got 2 minutes before the break. What are you into?
Well, let's see. With regard to Don Ledger, all right?
Yeah.
Again, you know, here we have an individual who has on the program before indicated that he has seen strange lights in the sky, and just lately, popped out another one for us. And the point is, I just wish everybody had an appreciation for what that means to a person such as Don Lever, Ledger, and a person of his caliber, that he come forward and make some kind of testimony like that. And the point is, I just wish everybody could appreciate that. Well, darn, you know, if he reports it, you can take it to the bank, listener.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's, yeah, but, you know, how often does the listener or anybody else take it to the bank? You know, it's just another bunch of, you know, saucer heads talking that Saturday night UFO stuff.
Well, until you take the time to actually look at what's going on, and then you can't but be convinced by the evidence, which is the history and the photographic evidence and the anecdotal evidence and the physical evidence and the personal evidence and the historical evidence and the pictorial evidence. And it just gets so big and so top-heavy that it's just got to fall over on your basic scabrous skeptomonkey.
Regular biweekly contributor and contributing editor Alfred Lemberg is with us from his home down there in Alabama, where frequently when he gets up very early in the morning and goes and sits on the porch, on the stoop, he sees things in the sky.
Sorry, way to make me sound like a real green toother, you know.
Oh, Alfred.
And I'm just sitting back here on the deck just watching the sky and stuff, and then, you know, like I'm, eating a lot of that stuff that we have to eat locally on account of we don't have a whole lot of nutrition down here. Nutrition, you understand? Nutrition.
Yeah, well, that's, that's the way that the folks at PSYCOP, the Committee for the So-Called Scientific Investigation of Claims of the Paranormal, would have us believe.
Yes, to their peril, turns out.
Yeah, well, a lot of people getting up in arms about all of them, and
well, they had to change their name, didn't they? And that didn't work very well.
No, it didn't. And now people don't know what to call them, so they don't call them at all. You know, it's broom.
Sounds like the beginning of a song. You can't call them. They won't be back on account of their got a stat deck. Hey, I mean, I pulled it right out. You know, what can I tell you?
Oh, yes, you did. You made a moment out of it. Nicely done.
With regard to Don Ledger, back to the series.
Back to Don and the UFO things, yes.
You know, you look what's going on in the ufological community today with regard to the dismissals that I had, dismissals of UFOs that I had alluded to earlier.
Mm-hmm.
And I can't but wonder when how Don Ledger is going to feel when Shag Harbor gets to, put itself into the skeptobunker's rotation of dismissal and derision.
No, I don't. I don't think that's going to happen. First of all, they've waited too long to do anything about it, and there were a couple of Mounties involved, and you don't want to mess with the Mounties. Even if you're an American.
American?
American, yeah.
That sounds like we're communicating an international threat here.
No, not at all.
At any rate, like Trindade, Helfen here that's going on presently, that
Heflin.
I guess that was just my allusion to it.
Heflin, yes.
Well, what can I tell? I'm left-handed. At any rate, so, regarding personal sightings, I really have to, give it up to him that, Mr. Ledger, thanks for having the stone to, come forward and say, hey, I'm seeing something peculiar in the sky. And I think that there are many more responsible people out there that are themselves seeing highly strange things in the sky. What can you say? And to have somebody of his caliber to come forward, it's just really a good thing.
Yeah, I liked Don the Caller's opening statement. As Bubba says here, did you catch Caller Don's opening statement? I'm an adult, but so I don't believe in UFOs.
Yes, I was going to mention it myself.
Yeah.
His being mature, I think, was the word that he used. And I don't believe in UFOs. And I'm going to give the guy the benefit of the doubt and just call that a disclaimer so he could kind of be remotely humble, because when it's all said and done, didn't he report same?
Mm-hmm.
There you are.
Yeah. But he waited 2 years to do it.
Well, you know, again, there's another guy like Don, but of somewhat lesser caliber, that has come forward at last and, you know, is interested in telling people the truth they mm-hmm. should hear.
Yeah, and an interesting description of those things on that great Northeast blackout that we had a couple of years back. Yeah,
mm-hmm.
Fascinating stuff.
I've heard about some of that,
you know. Yeah, yeah. Well, Bobby and I were up at the cottage. We didn't notice the lights went out straight away. It was, yeah.
That's a good little bit of synchronicity, isn't it?
Isn't it, though? And then suddenly the radio went off, and there we were in darkness, and I was brewing coffee the next morning on the barbecue.
Did you happen to notice, feel compelled to go outside and look at the sky and see anything remotely peculiar yourself?
Yeah, when you're at the cottage, you can do that any night of the week as long as there's no clouds in the sky. You just climb in a boat and go out into the middle of the lake and lie back there, and there are a bajillion stars.
I even get to see that down here in my area as a result of strapping on some military-grade night vision goggles.
Mm-hmm.
And you're able to look at the sky and see the sky somehow, you know, like a god might, you know, a lowercase g god, of course. But where you go out there and see hundreds of stars generally on a any given
mm-hmm.
night, and then go out and be able to see millions of them.
Yes.
I mean, whoa.
Yeah, that happened to me in Hawaii. That was the most mind-blowing experience, I think, because even north of the city here up in the Muskokas, you still get some light spill from
yeah.
the city. But you get out into the Hawaiian Islands and the first night there, and I'm walking along the pathway, and there are all these cute little lights with domes on them, you know, just lighting the pathway. And then I realized that the observatory there is on the big island where I was, and I look up. I'm carrying camera equipment, had to put it down because it was getting heavy at that time of the morning. And I look up and fell on my keister on the grass next to the pathway. It was just mind-blowing what I could see up there.
Yeah, it really does get exciting, and especially...
And the movement of things in between the stars, you know, in the skies over Hawaii,
like,
you know, it's like...
Somehow they're detaching and traveling.
Yeah, moving to the right and then... pausing and disappearing in front of the star, and then it appearing again and climbing upward, you know, to the north. We have 20 seconds to say goodnight, Alfred Lemberg.
Oh, see, there we've done it again. You know,
I just do this to each other.
Pages of stuff I wanted to get into.
Tell you what, write it up, okay? And post it to the list, and I'll put a big fat link into it in next Saturday night's program listing.
Well, let me just say this really quickly. Back before we wrote in books, we scratched cave walls with paint and soot, and we recorded saucers flying, scaring the observers, spying, pulsing inner lights and waves that we then chipped in stone, okay?
Okay. Good night, Alfred.
Good night.
2 weeks away.
Auf Wiedersehen.
Auf Wiedersehen. And to all of you out there, no matter where you may be around the planet, listening in real time or on delay, good night. Thank you. Thanks to Julian McNabb here, Jim Pacheco in Montreal, and a special good night to Mother, because it's Father's Day tomorrow.
That's this week's edition of Strange Days Indeed, hosted and produced by Errol Bruce Knapp, the executive producer.